Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa's John Papa John Entrepreneurial Center and their National Science Foundation I-Corps Training Program, helping faculty, staff, and students make an impact with their innovations and research. More at iowajpec.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and the holiday season needs to be different this year so people can be safe. We can gather together with our loved ones after the pandemic safely, and we need to get to the other side. But there are still a lot of things that we can do to bring comfort, light, and joy into our lives this season. For those who celebrate Christmas, putting up a Christmas tree is one of the most cherished traditions. So that's where we begin this hour with tree expert and Christmas tree expert Mark Vitosh, also DNR forester. Hello, Mark.
Good morning. I don't know about expert, but I know a little bit.
You know a lot. Horticulturist Cindy Haynes is going to join us in just a few minutes. And of course, she and Mark will answer your questions about all kinds of plants and trees. You can email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can give us a call, 866-780-9100. And Mark, a trend that I'm seeing this year is that a lot of people who do celebrate Christmas are putting up their decorations early because they need a little bit of cheer and a little bit of light in their lives. With a live Christmas tree, that's not necessarily a very good idea. How long, if it's taken care of properly, can a live Christmas tree really last?
Well, in general, you're looking at 4 to 6 weeks, and so that usually comes in the target. If folks, you know, the normal time that we start is the day after Thanksgiving, and so you're usually looking at, you know, 4 to 6 weeks after that point to get to Christmas. So in general, as long as we stay where we normally do, and I don't know of any farms or any operations that are selling live trees at this point, that they probably will pretty quick, again, next week. But next Friday is when we usually start. So if they follow the proper care procedures and stuff like that, I mean, I've worked at a Christmas tree farm for probably 15-plus years now, and it's not abnormal for people to tell me, hey, yeah, you know, we kept our Christmas tree up till the 4th or 5th of January, and it was still doing good. But again, just like any situation, if your tree starts to dry out and it's having issues, it's time to get it out.
And I can imagine that there may be a lot of people this year who do want to get a live Christmas tree, even if they haven't done that in recent years. Again, that's one of the things that we can do and do safely that is going to bring a lot of joy to families. So, pardon me. If you're looking for a real Christmas tree and you want to buy an Iowa Christmas tree, maybe even have an experience where you go to a Christmas tree farm and cut one down, the Iowa Christmas Tree Association is probably the best place to start, right?
Yep, they have a Find a Farm. And even if you find a farm in your area, the big thing this year is the call ahead, because I am finding out here and there are some farms that aren't going to be open this year because of COVID. Mm. Now, most in my area that I've talked to so far, looked at their websites, are going to be open, but I have found a few that are not. So it's critical to call ahead, but it looks like the majority of them that normally are open will be open this year. But yeah, you can go to their site, find a farm in your area. But like I said, it's important to call ahead. And the other thing is to look at their website. A lot of times they'll list their hours. And if they're going to have certain regulations or methods that they want people to follow, most sites that I'm seeing, they're kind of posting that criteria and stuff for folks ahead of time. So kind of do your research. And so you're prepared when you get there that you're not surprised that you can't do this or you can't do that, or they want you to do that. So I think most farms are doing a good job of educating people and kind of doing everything they can to promote protection. But at the same time, you want to find out what those guidelines are.
The website iowachristmastrees.com is a great place to find information. And the demand for Christmas trees in Iowa far exceeds the amount of Christmas trees that this state can actually produce. So when we see those Christmas tree lots in town, which, you know, spring up in every town, really, this time of year, where do those trees come from, Mark?
They can come from a lot of places. They can come from the West Coast. I think a lot come from Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and those areas. And, you know, too, a lot of our local farms, I work with a farm that we can only grow so many. We have a lot of very high demand for fir trees, and our farm cannot grow Fraser firs because of our soils. So we actually bring in multiple numbers of pre-cut trees from a farm in Wisconsin every year. We do grow a fir called Canaan fir, but I do know a number of farms, either they can't grow certain firs, and so they bring them in, or what's happening in a lot of cases, because of the demand, they don't have enough in their own facilities, in their own field, so they bring in some from other places, too. So there's kind of a mix out there. You know, most of the lots bring them in from out of state, and the choose and cut obviously have them in the fields, but a lot of times they'll also have some supplement pre-cuts to try to support their clientele.
Growing Christmas trees is such a unique kind of agriculture. It's such a long-term kind of agriculture. How long does it take to grow a Christmas tree to the point where you can sell it?
Well, the average is between 7 and 15 years, or the range is between 7. And I would say the average is probably around 7 or 8. So you figure you start, you actually have 7 years to probably 9 years of all investment before you even start to sell. So it is, and it's a lot of work. You have to have the land. It takes site preparation to prepare that land. There's planting involved, and we plant anywhere from, depending on how they set up the farm, anywhere from 600 trees to maybe 1,200 or more trees per acre, and those trees can cost 50 cents to a couple dollars a tree. Then once you get them in the ground, the fun just starts.
Trees just grow places, and of course they don't grow perfectly, but you're trying to produce that perfect, lovely, beautiful tree.
Right, and it takes a lot of care. So we have a lot of mowing. We have weed control, and that weed control can consist of herbicides, mulch, corn gluten meal. Basically, we want to keep the weed and grass vegetation away 2 to 3 feet away from those seedlings. Early on, we don't do a lot of pruning on those trees, but once the new growth starts to get 12 inches or more in a growing season, then they have to start the shearing process of those Christmas trees. So they may shear a Christmas tree that's sold. They may have to shear it 5 times before it's sold because they're creating that shape that they want for their Christmas tree and their clients want. So for most species, you can't plant it, and then 8 years later, it looks like the tree that they want. So you have to care for it. Then we also have to often prune a handle. We have to take the first foot to foot and a half from the bottom up so we have that nice handle so that we can get all those nice packages underneath the tree. So all that has to be done ahead of time. But then we have insects, disease, moles, gophers, deer, rabbits. It's not something that, again, you can't just stick them in the ground and then in 8 years you're selling Christmas trees. It takes a ton of work. And I have so much respect for our Christmas tree growers across Iowa and the U.S. because it takes a huge commitment to get that product to that client.
And you have to hope that what you plant is still a popular kind of tree 7 or 8 years later, right?
Yeah, I have seen a significant change in what people are looking for probably in the last 20 years.
Now, before we get to our break, we do need to do some practical work here. So
okay.
if you're buying a live Christmas tree, whether you go out to a farm and cut it down, or you buy it at a lot at a farm, or you buy it at a lot at town, there are some fundamentals that you need to take care of to make sure that that Christmas tree is going to last for you. So tell me what they are. What do you need to make sure happens as you take that Christmas tree home?
Well, the very first thing you need to do is measure the size of your room and know exactly what that is, and take a measuring tape with you, because for everybody, once you put that tree in the house, it always grows a foot. So it's really critical to measure so you know exactly what you need when you get there.
Well, and it's
so
not just the size of the tree, it's the size of the stand too. So you have to
yes,
think
ma'am.
It all through.
Right. So you got to think all that stuff before you pick what you want. But once you get the tree to your house, if it's been more than 3 to 6 hours from the time that you got it at the farm, if you cut it or they cut it for you, or they made a fresh cut at the lot, if it's been more than 3 to 6 hours, you probably want to put a half inch fresh cut on it before you put it in the stand. But if it's only a couple hours after you get it from the farm, so if you can get it from the farm, plan on getting home and getting it in the stand and getting it in water right away.
It's like a giant cut flower. It's going to suck up that water, right?
It is, and it's going to suck up a lot. They estimate, most of the literature I've seen, they estimate that for every inch of diameter of trunk, they can drink up to a quart a day. Now, that is early on. I mean, especially what I've noticed with our tree, usually in the first week and a half, it drinks like it's in the desert. But then after that, it tends to kind of slow down. And you still need to water it. You still need to keep it because you don't want that water level to ever drop below, because you can get air gaps. And once that happens, it's very difficult to get it to take up water again.
All right. And then you just have a giant drying tree in your
living
room.
Keep it away from heat sources. All those things we always talk about.
Absolutely. All right. We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment to answer your questions. You can ask Christmas tree questions, but you can also ask any tree question or any plant question that you have. Mark Vitosh, DNR Forester, is here today. Cindy Haynes will be here in just a moment, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa's John Papa John Entrepreneurial Center and their National Science Foundation iCORE training program, helping faculty, staff, and students make an impact with their innovations and research. More at iowajpec.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions about plants and trees. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me this hour, DNR Forester Mark Vitosh and Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Hello, Cindy.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here. And let's dive right into the phones. Kurt is on the line in Mount Pleasant. Hi, Kurt. Kurt, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Now I can. Yes. What's your question?
Can you hear me?
Well, I can, Kurt, but I'll give you another shot here, and then we'll put you back on hold. Do you have a question?
Yes, I do.
Okay, great.
We have a weeping cherry tree. It's been in the ground about 2 years. We bought it when it was about 12 foot tall, but it is weeping so badly, it's bent clear over to the ground. I'm wondering, can I go ahead and trim that now so that it will look better come summertime?
I'll go, Cindy, and you can chime in. Generally, if it's, you're a little further south, but I would assume things have gone dormant, and you can trim things this time of year when they're dormant, or you can wait until about March before things start to green up and do it then. For cherries and stuff like that, I think you might actually be better to wait and actually do it closer towards spring. But basically during the dormant season, you can prune it. But the key is, and most of those weeping cherries, and Cindy can correct me if I'm wrong, they usually don't get really big. They're usually medium size or smaller trees. So you're going to either want to cut back to a side branch or to a bud so you can kind of control which direction it's going to grow.
Yeah, and I agree, Kurt. I would wait until February or March to do any cutting, because sometimes the weeping cherry trees, certain cultivars are not as hardy as others. So there might be some dieback over the winter anyway, and you might have to go back in and do some cutting in March anyway. So if you can wait until March, then you're just doing it all at one time. It's in the dormant season, and it's a good time to kind of look and see what you need to do. And it shouldn't require too much pruning, just to kind of get it off the ground.
Great, great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Kurt. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Karen is on the line next in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Karen.
Hi. We lost about 24 mature trees on our one-acre lot after derecho.
Oh.
And some of these were really close together and were wonderful hammock trees. I'm going to replant, and right now I'm in the process of planting, and we have a variety of kind, but oak, maple, and some serviceberry, smaller under things. The question is, when I read about instructions, they say to space all these things out, you know, according to their height, and they should be like 40 feet apart, so they have plenty of room. But I really want more of that grove effect that we lost, where they were close together and you could do a hammock and they're all growing up together at the same time. So I guess I'm wondering, can I put these a little bit closer together? What's the closest I can have some maples and serviceberries, for example?
The answer is yes. You can do whatever you want, Karen, because in our native forest, that's what happens. It's not uncommon to have trees, you know, 5 to 10 feet apart, even big oaks sometimes. The thing you have to understand is when they're closer like that, you're only going to get partial crowns. Usually those trees are going to grow up together, and so one side of each tree might not be as big, but then you want to give them room on the other sides so you can at least get a third or three-fourths of the crown to grow. So in general, it kind of depends what you want. If you want these big, open-grown oaks, then yes, you want them 35, 40 feet apart. The thing to understand, too, is I probably would not consider serviceberry much of a hammock tree, especially for a guy my size. They don't get that big.
No, they're more decorative.
Yeah. So you don't want me to come over because I'll snap them in half.
I was thinking the maple and the oak for the hammocks, but serviceberry kind of filling in some gaps with looks.
And understand, too, if you're using like sugar maple, well, the sugar maple and the serviceberry are going to grow. They're fairly shade tolerant, so they can grow. They may be trees if you have especially a few trees left. The serviceberry and the sugar maple could be in areas where maybe you have a little more shade, and then you make sure you concentrate the oaks in the very open sunlight areas.
Got it. That's great to know. And red maple, where does he fall in the sun range?
I would put red maple in pretty much full sun, but it can take some partial shade too. Sugar maple is probably one of the most shade-tolerant maples, but red maple can have some tolerance, too. The big thing is diversity, and it sounds like you're doing that, because we do have a new potential pest called the Asian longhorn beetle that's not in Iowa yet, and we have planted tons of maple in Iowa, and its favorite food is maple. So you want to make sure you're going to plant 10 or 20 trees that you don't plant 10 maples or even 10 oaks. You try to mix it up as much as possible.
Good luck, Karen. Thank you so much for your call. And what a terrible, terrible loss. Mm-hmm. I do have to ask you, Mark, since we were talking about hammocks, we had Jeff Isles, also a tree guy, on the show a couple years ago. He is pretty down on hammocks and trees. And that was when the habit of hammocking or the trend of hammocking, taking hammocks out and putting them up on campus was really taking off. How do you feel about hammocks and trees? And do you have to wait quite a while before a hammock isn't going to hurt a tree?
I'm not a huge fan either, but I believe people can make their own choices like we talk about all the time. But yeah, I'm not a huge fan of them. But I would say most trees, you're probably going to want to be maybe 8 to 10 inches in diameter before you even think about it. And if I did it, I would use straps that are very wide, and I would do it temporarily, you know, things like that. But no, anything that we do that puts pressure on a trunk, no matter what size it is, can potentially cause some damage. Obviously, as they get bigger and you're doing a soft cloth strap or something and it's not tight, it's going to cause less damage. But, you know, we're going to do what we want to do. And we put swings on trees and stuff like that too. But in general, any of that stuff always could cause potential damage to a tree.
All right. So maybe awareness at least helps a little bit.
Right. We're not going to tell you not to do it, but try to do it in a way that minimizes stress on the tree.
Right. Jeff will tell you not to do it, but Mark's not going to do that.
I'm more middle of the ground.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Kate is on the line in Urbandale. Hi, Kate.
Hey, good morning.
Hi.
I have a question related to derecho. We lost a very large little leaf linden tree in that storm. It was a memorial tree to the family. And we live in a bike trail area of Urbandale where there's a lot of big trees around. But we have had a suggestion to put to replace with a tri-color beech tree. We're looking to put something up that is really strong. And I think linden trees were, but this one just crumpled in the derecho. And I wondered what thoughts you have on a replacement.
Well, I'm going to throw my 3 cents on the tricolor beech, and Cindy can throw hers too. But tricolor beech is a beautiful tree, but I would call it very variable in Iowa. I have not seen a lot of big ones. It gets planted. People try it, but beech in itself is likes rich soils and kind of cool environments, not pure shade, but likes to be protected. Probably not the best long-term durable tree that I would think of. I think there's a lot of other choices. I'm a big fan of oaks, red oak, chinkapin oak. If those are too big, there are some other choices depending on how big you want. Species like honey locust, I've talked about Kentucky coffee tree before. And the thing is, one thing with the linden, you may want to kind of know why it broke. If it broke at the ground, it may have had stem girdling roots, which is something that you can potentially prevent during the planting stages. So if that was a tree that you really like, there are some varieties of little leaf linden that handle Japanese beetle better than others. So that could still be a selection. So again, what it's really going to come down to, Kate, is how big a tree do you want?
Mm-hmm. We're looking at about a three-story tree, and it's a really nice position in our lawn because whatever we plant there will get afternoon shade because we have two huge pin oaks on the west side of the lot. And then it's like what happens with the bike trail area and those trees, that also would provide some afternoon shade. But it would get great east sun, midday sun, and the linden obviously liked it. It did not break down at the ground level. I think we planted properly, but it it broke up near a quarter away from the top of the tree.
Okay.
And it,
it probably
just
had some
crumpled.
Included bark. Yeah.
Yeah.
So two other species that I would throw at you are hornbeam and hophorn beam, which are kind of medium-sized trees that are in that 15 to probably 30 or so foot range and have some pretty good tolerance to shade. They're both native understory woodland trees in Iowa. The hornbeam is also called musselwood, and the hophorn beam is called ironwood.
Yeah, I like the sounds of that, especially standing up to wind.
But I would do some investigation and look at those different species and really see if they're going to fit. We have a publication called Rethinking Maple, Selecting Trees for Your Yard on our Iowa DNR site. And then if you go to iowatreepest.com, there's some alternatives to ash that Dr. Isles has. So he has small statue trees and larger trees. So there's good lists to look at these different species, look at cultivars, and then try to find the one that's going to fit best for you.
How's the fall color on that hornbeam?
Not real good. It's more of a kind of off yellow brown. So it probably isn't going to be your best for fall color.
Okay. Well, I'll do some further research and thank you for the comment.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Kate. Clearly being very thorough about that decision. I love that. You can give us a call with your questions, 866-780-9100. Here's a question for you, Cindy, from Marlene. Is it time to mulch roses for the winter?
It is getting to be that time. Usually we like to make sure that we're getting temperatures around 20 degrees, nighttime temperatures. The roses have already lost their foliage, so you can start tying them up. I think in the usually it's around Thanksgiving that I start adding that soil and that mulch to the base. So right on time for this one.
All right, and let's go back to the phones. Keith is on the line in Bloomfield. Hi, Keith.
Yes, hello.
Hi, what's
this
your question?
This doesn't pertain to trees. It's just a quick question.
Sure.
My ground is not frozen. I rototilled it nice and deep. Can I plant spring bulbs to come up in the spring? Tulips, daffodils, whatever.
Absolutely. Please go for it. This is a great time to do that. Usually November's a good month. We just try and get in there before the ground is frozen. So plant all of those spring flowering bulbs. The tulips, the daffodils, their larger bulbs need to be about 6 to 8 inches deep. The smaller bulbs like crocus, about 4 inches deep. Then you might want to, sometimes I mulch over the area where I plant the bulbs just so I know where I've planted them. Wait, you've done your job, and you're just going to enjoy some beautiful blooms in the spring.
Absolutely. And the highs are supposed to be above freezing for the next few days at least.
Yes.
So now's this is your lucky year to procrastinate a little bit. But now is the right time to do it, right, Cindy?
This is true. So if it's nice out there, this is a great time to get out and do it. And I've done it when it's not so nice out as well. Get out there and plant those spring flowering bulbs. You can also usually buy some of those fairly inexpensively right now, plant a few, and then force a few to actually bloom indoors in the winter as well.
Nice. All right, here's a question from Earl. Mark, I've lived on an acreage for 20 years, and this is the first year that I did not have truckloads full of acorns and hickory nuts to pick up. Not that I'm complaining, but what might be the reason?
Well, it's really good that he's had truckloads because normally they tend to be produced on quite a cycle. Usually, especially with acorns, we have a kind of a bumper crop every 2 to 3 years. And actually, believe it or not, in this region, in the last 20 years I've been here, it's probably been more like every 5 to 6 years. So the fact that he's usually had a really good crop is great. But what he's seeing is pretty normal. So, again, every 2 to 3 years, we tend to have a bumper crop, and then they'll vary from there. I see that on walnuts, hickory nuts,
sometimes pecans, but especially on the oak trees. A lot of variation.
All right. And we have a break coming up here, so I'll just read this email. An endorsement from Tim. He says, I thought you'd like some feedback on advice you've given on Hort Day in the past. Last fall, I called in to ask how to overwinter some chestnut seedlings I had in pots. You'd advised me to mulch or pile mulch around them pots or to dig a shallow trench to put the pots in. I did that. They all survived. This summer, I had a white pine that was damaged by heat produced from my neighbor burning a fire too close to my tree. The needles all turned brown and dropped off. You advised me to leave the tree alone and it would probably come back, and it did. So just an endorsement. You can trust Hort Day. 10 out of 10 would recommend. Cindy Haynes and Mark Vitosh are here with us this hour. We are going to take... It's nice,
it
right?
It had to be us.
Yep.
Yeah, thanks.
We are going to take a short break right now. Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Mark Vitosh, DNR Forester. We will be back to answer more questions in a moment. And you can trust the experts. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa's John Papa John Entrepreneurial Center and their National Science Foundation I-Corps Training Program, helping faculty, staff, and students make an impact with their innovations and research. More at iowajpec.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Mark Vitosh, DNR Forester, and Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. You can call with your questions, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Nancy's on the line next in Marion. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, Charity. Good morning, Mark and Cindy.
What's your question?
I have a couple of questions. My first question has to do with the Christmas trees. And what is the best, like, food or water ratio to give your tree once you get it inside for that, you know, four to six week period that we have them in our homes?
100% water.
Okay.
No food, no aspirin, no salt, no nothing.
No
paprika.
No.
You name it. Water.
Okay. Does it matter if it's softened water or should we get water from our local grocery store?
What I've seen, it doesn't matter. Most of the national stuff I see and stuff, they say right out of the faucet shouldn't be a problem. So, yeah, you just... Any additional stuff will have a tendency to clog things up.
Okay, that's good to hear. So my second question has to do with planting trees after the derecho we had this August. And I wanted to know, what's a really good, like, shade tree that grows really very solidly straight up in an urban area? Full sun, and it can be both dry and moist depending on how much rain we're getting.
But when you say moist, not necessarily wet, just moist.
No,
but it drains.
Just moist, yeah. Yeah, it drains, but it might take like a day. Like the ground gets squishy for about maybe a day, unless
the ground does get squishy. So I may look at a species like swamp white oak. Could be a good option. If you don't want it too big and it is kind of moist, another tree would be something like river birch. They're not super long lived, maybe 50 to 60 years, but they take a little moisture. Those would be two species. Another one I'll throw out there, and I throw this out once in a while, but tends to grow on bottoms where there is some moisture, is one called Kentucky coffee tree.
Oh, I've not heard of that one.
With Kentucky coffee tree, you got to be prepared for the ugly stick syndrome for about 6 years. It'll look like a dead, ugly stick in the wintertime for about 6 years till they really start to develop branches. But once they do, they're kind of a majestic big tree.
Ooh, that sounds good. So sticky, kind of like a ginkgo at the beginning, right?
Yeah, in the sense of, yeah, it just looks more like a stick until it really starts to to develop those branches. But as we always say, what I would really do is look at some of these publications, look at your spacing, look at the conditions, and then look to see what's going to fit best.
All right, Nancy, thank you so much for your call. Here's a question for you, Cindy, from Tom in Polk City. Is there still time to plant garlic, or is it too late?
No, it's actually not too late. It's been, you know, it's been nice this fall, and we seem to have a bit of an extended fall. So, and usually garlic is planted into early November anyway, but I would get it done as soon as possible because it does require some roots to start to grow, and the sooner you can get it in now, the longer it has to do that, and the better it will perform. But so this weekend looks like a great weekend to plant spring flowering bulbs and garlic.
All right. Back to the phones. John is on the line in Cedar Falls. Hi, John.
Hi, Charity. Question is, I have a couple walnut trees in the backyard that have stopped producing fruits or very little fruit coming from them. And I was looking to replace them with what I thought would be a great tree, a willow. But I don't see a lot of them in city, so I'm just wondering, why isn't there willows in city, and is that a plant that would tolerate being grown where walnuts once lived?
That's a good question, John. The reason you probably don't see as many willows in town and near buildings and stuff like that is they're pretty fast growing. They actually, most of them like fairly moist conditions. But being as fast as they are, they're much shorter lived. Depending on species and variety, you're probably looking at probably 20 to 45 years for willows. I mean, there are willows that last longer, but they also tend to be fairly weak wooded. So they're more susceptible to wind, ice, and snow. There's a lot of different species that can grow around walnuts. Walnuts do produce a chemical called jugolone, and some don't do as well. I'm not sure. The thing is, that material will stay in the soil for a while. There are some lists out there that you can find through Purdue, and actually Iowa State has a where they give some suggestions on susceptibility to this chemical called jugolone. But the biggest reason you don't see a lot of willows is they're fairly fast, but they're fairly weak wooded. So so they're better for if you got a space in the backyard that's moist and you want a really nice willow that'll kind of take the space but be by itself, I think it's an okay tree in the right place. But around buildings, houses, stuff like that, there could be issues later on.
Yeah, this would be plenty clear of any buildings or other houses or garage structures. It's looking just for something to fill the space and give us a quick amount of shade for the next few years. So
the might thing be a great I would option. Think about too, John, is if you have enough space, is you could plant one, and if you've got room, then plant some others that will be slower that will eventually come on as that willow starts to have issues.
Right. Yeah, great idea. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call. And let's do a couple email questions here. So many tree questions today. From Diana in Iowa City, we are about to plant a new tree soon, a crab apple. What should we do to keep it healthy over the winter?
If you're going to plant it here in the next week or two, just like anything else, is if we keep these temperatures up, you're probably going to want to water it at least once a week or so. Keep the ball moist, but not saturated. Keep it, you know, water it like you would if it was next to the garage and you were trying to keep it moist. You know, this time of year with no leaves, they're not going to lose as much moisture, so you may not have to water as much. But before it freezes, it's good to keep that ball moist. And when we water them, we want to just water that ball. We're not, in the first year, we're not concerned about getting moisture outside the ball. We want to just focus the water. So next spring and next summer, make sure you water it through the season, but you water that ball. And you may have to water it depending on your soil conditions, you know, maybe twice a week, depending if you have mulch and stuff, so you stick your
your finger down in there to check that ball. But again, keep that ball moist, but not heavily saturated.
All right, and here's another tree planting question from Gene. In the spring of 2019, I attended an event where apple trees were grafted. Last winter, I put them in the garage, and they leafed out great this past spring. I never got them planted. They seemed just too small. I assume I shouldn't plant them in the ground this late, although the ground isn't frozen. Should I put the pots back in the garage for the winter? If so, how much should I water them?
I'll let Cindy take that one.
All right, Cindy.
You know, I think it's probably okay to plant now if you want to go ahead and plant them now. If they've been outside, they're acclimated, and once again, they'll have a chance to grow a little bit of roots this fall, as long as you keep them watered, like Mark said. If you're going to keep them inside in the garage, they'll be okay. If it's an unheated garage and it stays around, you know, above freezing and around 40 degrees, somewhere in there, I might still put them next to a window because they're going to try and leaf out early, and you're going to have to, you know, acclimate them slowly to spring conditions in the spring. And you may have to water them once or twice if they're in that kind of protected garage location. So it'll work, and they can get a little bigger. But if you can get them planted now and water them well and then cage them from rabbits, which might like to nibble on them, that would be the least amount of care, I guess, and you're one step closer to having them planted and growing in your garden.
Right. So there, that would probably be the best move. But do protect them because they're little, right?
Because they're little and everything will try and munch on them.
All right. Back to the phones. Dan is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Dan.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. 2020 has been a wonderful year for my garden and the yard. One big surprise this year is we have a 50-foot Dawn Redwood in the back of our property, and it produced cones that it held on to during the derecho, but it's been dropping them. I've collected some seeds and in hopes of propagating them. My question would be, I know I have to be real attentive with them for the first couple of years, but what do I consider when I'm trying to find a final home for them in the yard somewhere? Mark?
I'd want to put them somewhere, you know, fairly protected, not in a southwest west exposure. They don't necessarily need shade or anything like that, but maybe an east or a north exposure is probably the areas where they're somewhat protected. They'll probably do best.
Okay, well, right now they are sheltered. Single one is sheltered behind our butternuts, and it's done really well.
Yep.
Survived the storm. But I'm just hopeful that of all the weird things that have happened in 2020, that these redwood trees might sprout, and I'll be glad to share them with people. So
yeah, that's
awesome. Great to hear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks.
All right.
Thanks so much for your call, Dan. A few silver linings this year. Linda's on the line in Ankeny. Hi, Linda.
Hello, thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, what's your question?
Pardon me?
What's your question?
Last year, we put in a nice spring bulb garden, and they did just great this spring. But now with the fluctuating temperatures, my allium and my daffodils and my garden phlox are all coming up again for the second time this fall.
Oh, wow.
Will they survive the winter, or is there something I need to do to protect them?
Right. They, you know, and it has been kind of a strange year weather-wise
yeah.
as well. There are some bulbs that do typically come up or send up some foliage in the fall, like grape hyacinths, and we don't worry about those because they're just being opportunistic, and, you know, and getting some extra photosynthesis and carbohydrates stored. And maybe that's a bit of the case with the allium and the daffodils. I'm guessing the foliage is starting to emerge just because it's a little bit warmer than normal, and they might try and photosynthesize a little bit. The problem is you don't want to see any flower buds because they only have one shot at this. And once they start to produce some flower buds and it gets cold, and it will most likely get cold over the winter, they're done, at least for that year. So what I would suggest that you do is maybe put some mulch around these bulbs that are starting to emerge, kind of block a little bit of the light, kind of insulate it a little bit more. And then once we get to some, you know, fairly cold, consistently cold weather, it'll stall them. And that mulch will act a little bit as an insulating blanket. And hopefully they might have a little tip damage to the foliage in the spring, but the flower buds will be protected so that they still bloom well for you next year. So they're a little bit off like everyone else is in 2020, and just kind of insulate them as much you can. That's really about all that you can do, and hope that they, you know, wait it out and they get stalled, and so that they're blooming on time in the spring.
All right, Linda, thanks for your call. So many weird things have happened this year. Let's go next to Aaron in Marion. Hi, Aaron.
Hey there, Charity. So kind of our situation, as with other people, we lost trees, but we have an ash tree that's kind of on the way out. And our tree guys aren't going to be able to get here until middle of December, probably. In the meantime, I bought a sycamore that's kind of in a 5-gallon bucket. The tree itself is maybe 4 feet high, but we're going to put it close to where the ash is coming out. So I'm wondering if it's too late in the year to plant that after they take it out mid-December. Right now I've planted the pot in the garden, wondering if that's the best thing or if there's something else I should do.
This is me, Aaron, but I would probably just keep it in the garden and then move it first thing in the spring when you know you can get where you want to be. Having it in the garden, plant it. What I would probably do is just, and you probably have already done this, just keep it in the pot, plant it in the ground, mulch it good. I would protect the trunk with some kind of wrap or something so that the rabbits and mice and different things don't mess with it. But then come spring, when the soil is friable and you can start digging a nice hole, I would just easily pull it out of the ground and replant it.
Okay, great. And is there anything that you'd keep in mind specifically for a sycamore tree to help it get a good start?
Just like anything else, the key to all trees that we plant, usually if they die in the first year or two, they die because they either get too much water or not enough water. They usually don't die of diseases, insects, and other problems. So water management is the key, and proper watering is the key.
All right.
For any tree.
Aaron, thanks a lot for your call. Let's try to squeeze in one more question from Terry in Atkins. Hi, Terry.
Hi there.
What's your question quickly?
I have a large brush pile, but the brush pile from the derecho is about the size of a semi, probably. And I'm scared to light it because I've got about 80 feet away. I have some pine trees and some evergreen trees. I'm just worried about, is that far enough away?
I think there's a good possibility, even at 80 feet with a large brush pile, with the right heat, you could cause issues with trees like that.
All right, so what's your recommendation? Don't do it?
That would be my recommendation, or try to move it or break it down or something like that.
All right. Terry, thanks a lot for your call. We are out of time, but Mark Vitosh, thank you so much for being here today.
Hey, always a pleasure.
DNR Forester Mark Vitosh. Cindy Haynes, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. And this is our last weekly Hort Show of 2020. We'll go to our every other week or so schedule from now through March. But don't worry, we'll still be talking plants on Fridays here on Talk of Iowa, just not every Friday. This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Charity Nebbe. Have a great weekend.